Radio Prague News.
The Czech Central Bank is warning of counterfeit banknotes circulating in Moravia. Sunday was the hottest day of the past 244 years recorded at Prague's Clementium station, and after 16 years, the Czech Republic could have a new addition to the UNESCO World Heritage listing. The Czech National Bank has warned that a large amount of counterfeit 500 crown and 1,000 crown banknotes have been appearing in several Moravian cities, including Brno, Ostrava, and Olomouc. The bank said the fakes are of poor quality, having been printed using inkjet technology. The colors are off and basic security features such as watermarks are missing, but they are still getting past consumers. The Czech Leading Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI, fell to a 10-year low in June due to a faster-than-expected decrease in production and a fall in new business. The market agency said on Monday that Czech PMI, now at 45.9 points, has contracted for 6 months in a row. As in previous months, the development was fairly consistent with relevant PMIs from abroad, mainly in Germany. The foreign minister of the Palestinian Authority is due to pay a working visit to the Czech Republic next Monday. Last year, Palestine withdrew its ambassador from Prague after Czech politicians supported the opening of the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. Palestine considers it a violation of international law. Nearly every other Czech plans to spend their summer holidays in this country, while more than a third hope to get to the sea, this according to a June survey by NMS Market Research. Top domestic destinations include cottages, historic castles and chateaux, and the mountains. After 16 years, the Czech Republic could have a new addition to the UNESCO World Heritage List. A national delegation is heading to Azerbaijan on Monday to lobby for including the Krushno-Hozhi region, a uniquely preserved landscape formed by centuries of ore mining. The Czech Republic and the German state of Saxony have submitted a joint nomination. It concerns 5 places on the Czech side of the shared border and 17 on the German side. The organizers of the Beats for Love dance music festival say they expect over 40,000 visitors this year. The event starts on Wednesday in Dolny Vitkovice, outside of Ostrava. This year, the festival will feature over 400 artists from around the world, performing on 13 stages. Among the acts are German DJ and producer Robin Schulz and the Dutch duo calling itself Chocolate Puma. Sunday was the hottest day ever recorded at Prague's Clementium station, the oldest Czech monitoring station. The temperature on June the 30th reached 37.9 degrees Celsius, the highest since measurements began there back in 1775. The previous record for June was 37.5 degrees, set only last Wednesday. And finally, the weather. Following heavy thunderstorms likely on Monday, it should be sunny and warm throughout the country on Tuesday, with only light cloud cover, especially in South Bohemia and in Moravia. Daytime highs should range between 23 to 27 degrees Celsius. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now. Hello and welcome. You are tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Brian Kennedy. Coming up in today's program, fresh from surviving a no-confidence vote, the coalition government now faces some internal threats. We bring you highlights from the red carpet at the ongoing Karlo Vivari International Film Festival, and we meet New Orleans resident Julie Orbishova, who says Czech beads were a mainstay of the city's Mardi Gras parade for decades. All that is coming up now, so please stay with us. As Europe labors under a scorching heat wave, the Czech government is feeling the heat for some very different reasons. The fate of the Babiš administration, which recently survived a second no-confidence motion in parliament since taking office a year ago, once again hangs in the balance. Daniela Lazarva has the details.
The minority government of Prime Minister Andrei Babiš has faced increasing criticism from opposition benches and mounting street protests directed primarily against the Prime Minister, who is suspected of EU subsidy fraud. But this time, the threat of collapse comes from inside the ruling coalition. The Social Democrats, the junior party in the minority government, has threatened to walk out of the coalition over President Miloš Zeman's refusal to appoint a new culture minister from their ranks, which they argue is at variance with a coalition agreement signed. Party leader Jan Hamáček urged Prime Minister Babiš to use legal means to force the president to act, and Babiš has refused to do so, raising anger within the badly weakened Social Democrats, many of whom are now in favour of leaving the government, on the argument that the party is only losing public support by remaining in an alliance with the embattled Prime Minister. Andrei Babiš attempted to quell the storm over the weekend, warning that the fall of the minority government would lead to early elections. He told Czech television he is confident he can persuade the president to appoint the Social Democrats' nominee for culture minister, giving the coalition a new lease on life.
I will talk to the president and explain that there is a certain coalition agreement in place, and while he may have different views on the culture minister and the Social Democrats' choice of successor, he should respect that agreement and comply with my request to effect a change of guard at the ministry.
The leaders of the ruling parties are to meet with President Miloš Zeman on Tuesday for talks that are likely to decide the fate of the Babiš administration. The president, who clearly expected to have his own way over the matter, broke off his holiday and returned to Prague on Sunday to prepare for the all-important talks. He has in the past pushed his constitutional powers to the limit and beyond to get his own way, and the prime minister's unwillingness to go into an open confrontation with him has only strengthened his negotiating position. Much will depend on the president's hidden agenda and what his motives are for sticking to a decision that is clearly further harming the weakened Social Democrats. In an interview for Saturday's Mladá fronta Dnes daily, Mr. Zeman said the Social Democrats' threat to leave the government amounted to suicide, given their meagre popularity rating. He has made it clear that should they do so, he would again ask Andrei Babiš to form a new government, and he himself would be a power broker in any subsequent cabinet reconstruction. Should the country face snap elections, it will be the president who will call the date, and much will depend on the public mood between now and then. According to a flash poll released on Sunday, Babiš's ANO party is still in the lead with 25.5% support, but given the protracted government crisis, its popularity has taken a slide to what is the worst result since 2016.
Daniela Lozarova reporting. The stars have been out at the Karlo Vivari Film Festival. Hollywood actress Julianne Moore received the Cinema Showcase's Lifetime Achievement Award, while actor Casey Affleck also met the cheers of fans on the red carpet at Hotel Thermal. Ian Willoughby has the story.
The 54th edition of the Karlo Vivari International Film Festival got underway on Friday evening with a spectacular show in which dancers on trapezes wowed the 1,200-strong audience. But the real highlight of the evening was the presentation of Karlo Vivari's Crystal Globe for Outstanding Artistic Contribution to World Cinema to Hollywood star Julianne Moore. She was there with her husband, Bart Freundlich, who directed opening film After the Wedding, in which Moore stars, and she referred to her spouse in her speech.
I was reminded about how I always say to my children that they should follow their interests, because you never know where they will lead them. And when I think of it, I think how lucky I was to follow my interest in story, and that led me not just to a life and a career in film that I love, but also to a man that I work with and love very much. So thank you so much for this. Thank you.
Moments earlier, Moore had explained on the red carpet what receiving Karlo Vivari's most prestigious award meant to her.
I'm a big fan of film festivals. I mean, for me, it's an opportunity to participate in a global film community and to have someone recognize your work that way. As a member of that community, in a place where there's so many artistic achievements, it's really quite an honor.
Also ascending the red carpet at the gala opening was Moore's After the Wedding co-star Billy Crudup, who said he was sorry he didn't have more time in Karlovy Vary.
I wish I could be here longer because of the program that they've curated so far. I found to be really, really interesting, dynamic, fresh, and ambitious.
On Sunday afternoon, a huge crowd gathered again in front of Festival Center Hotel Thermal to welcome acting star Casey Affleck. He was presenting his new film, Light of My Life, on his second visit to Karlovy Vary in only 3 years.
I have to say, this is one of my favorite festivals in the world. I've been to a lot of them. I came here a couple of years ago with Ghost Story, and it was an experimental movie, and the audiences were so generous, and the place is so beautiful, and everyone loves watching movies here, and it takes a long time to make a movie, and they're not always great, sometimes they're okay, but like children, you love them all just the same. So to be able to share them in this environment, it feels great, so thank you for that.
The other major star at this year's Karlovy Vary will be U.S. actress Patricia Clarkson. She'll receive the festival's Lifetime Achievement Award at Saturday's closing ceremony.
Ian Willoughby there, reporting from Karlovy Vary. Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, where it's now time for our main feature. Did you know that in New Orleans, Czech-made beads were once a common element of Mardi Gras celebrations and parades? Well, journalist Julie Urbisheva tells Ian Willoughby they are still to be found in antique shops in the U.S. city in this edition of One on One.
Journalist Julia Urbisheva has just published a book entitled Doma v Nola, or At Home in Nola, with Nola meaning New Orleans, Louisiana. Having first visited the city on a student's day in 2007, Urbisheva has now been living for several years in New Orleans, from where she reports for Czech radio, Czech television, and other outlets. Our conversation took in Nola's Czech connections, its crime rate, and Hurricane Katrina. But it began with the organization of the city's famous Mardi Gras parades.
So Mardi Gras has this motto which says it's the biggest show for everybody in the world. It's the biggest show for free, so it is for everybody. But it has different kind of rules. It has different kind of tradition within the big tradition. So the crews, we call them crews, the organizations who basically make the parades, are very old. They can be from like 19th century, and those were typically just for men. And there are still some of those working, and you cannot attend if you're a woman. And there are like 10 new ones where everybody can attend and can have fun. And also there is also carnival in the streets for the hipsters and like new people. Seriously, it's fun for everybody.
And the people who take it really seriously, like they spend the whole year preparing their costumes and stuff, right?
Yes. Not just that, they spend a lot of money. They spend, you know, thousands of dollars for buying all those beads, which they throw and which is garbage within a minute. So all the $1,000 just basically are thrown out of the floats. But it's part of it, and people are very proud that they can be actually part of the crew. And it's not just that you call the crew and say, hey, I want to be a member. You have to be on the wait list for many years sometimes, because it's like really, really very big tradition there.
In your book, At Home in Nola, you have one section called Beads All the Way from Czechoslovakia. How did beads come from this part of the world to New Orleans?
That was a surprise for me. And I tried to dig in the history. I tried to reach the historians in New Orleans and historians here in Czech Republic. And I figured nobody really has nothing about it written, which was kind of disappointing for me. But from what I learned from the historian of the New Orleans Museum or Louisiana Museum, he said that probably what happened was that some members of the crews came to visit Europe at the beginning of the 20th century and found these beautiful glass beads. Apparently some wife found them and liked them, so they made a deal and they bought like a lot of beads, and they were basically using them for carnival until 60s. After that, they started using just plastic beads from China, which is until now, but you can still find those Czech glass beads in some antique stores, and they're very popular. People still remember those from, you know, they're saying like, oh yeah, my grandma used to have like hundreds of them. So it's still there.
I had the sense when I was there that people in New Orleans see themselves as being different or almost separate from the rest of the United States. Is that true, do you think? That's how they see themselves?
Maybe not just they, but also the rest of the US. I feel like, yes, like the people who are coming from North make jokes about Southerners, about their accent. So yes, it's maybe right, your observation. And I think they're very proud of it, honestly, that they're different and, you know, they're very positive, they're very culturally oriented, you know, it's just original place.
I've never seen any city be so patriotic. They all have the Saints flags everywhere and the, what's it called, the fleur-de-lis,
yes,
the flag everywhere. It's remarkable to me how one city could be so proud of itself.
Yes, that's very true. The fleur-de-lis, you can find it everywhere. You can find cookies, you have jewelry, you know, like if there is a Mardi Gras especially or Saints games, you see old ladies wearing, you know, jewelry and t-shirts. Everybody wears it. It's everywhere, seriously.
You arrived 18 months after Katrina. Obviously, New Orleans has got back on its feet like a long time ago. But I'm wondering, what's your sense of how Katrina changed New Orleans in a deep way?
It had a big impact. It just basically everything changed. People say it actually helped the city. I mean, it might sound weird, but all the money which came from Washington, D.C. was basically something new, something what made New Orleans what it's now. Because when Katrina happened, a lot of people were complaining about, you know, the president, like just not supporting them enough, sending the troops late and so on. So at least they could use the help and the money to rebuild. And there was no doubt that they will rebuild. There was a big motto after Katrina, like we need to rebuild and, you know, we just cannot lose New Orleans. Because of course there were questions if it's worth it because there can be another hurricane and just the floods again. But they decided it needs to be rebuilt, and I think everybody is happy about it.
But is it more expensive or more gentrified or maybe even more white than it was?
I don't think it's more white, but it's definitely different. That's true. When I remember when I came for the first time, the city was kind of empty because a lot of people left and never came back. Right now, the city is coming back. It's becoming very crowded. Prices of houses are increasing incredibly. All the festivals are just crazily crowded. Seriously, it's just, I feel like, ah, I don't want to go to jazz festivals anymore because it's just too many people. It's very popular because the city is just beautiful and people love to come and love to stay. But it's becoming a little difficult for the people like really living there.
I guess maybe no city in the world has such a reputation as a musical city as New Orleans. Of course, it was the birthplace of jazz. But is that tradition still alive today and kind of thriving? Or is it something that's become kind of ossified and commercial and targeted at tourists?
I think it's a mix of both. Of course, in the French Quarter, which is the city center, there are tens of music clubs where you can hear really great bands and you can hear just the regular bands. I would avoid the Bourbon Street, for example. It is a very famous street, but it's just craziness. And you cannot really find really great music except of a couple clubs. Preservation Hall is an amazing place where you can hear like really the best tradition jazz music. So, of course, there are places where they really present the best of the tradition. And It is also alive. I would definitely say it's alive because if you look at the music scene within schools, for example, they really offer great music programs for kids. They even distribute musical instruments to people who cannot really afford. So they really try to promote the tradition.
In your book also, you refer to the high crime rate in New Orleans, and the murder rate there is comparable to the whole of the Czech Republic. Have you experienced crime directly yourself?
Fortunately not. Nothing ever happened to me, and I hope it will stay like that. But I have many stories from around, and I have to tell you that I stopped watching local news, because if I watch it and if I read news every morning, I would just probably stay locked in my house.
It's all shootings?
It's not just shootings, but there is kidnapping of cars. Somebody just shoot a person in a restaurant just a couple blocks, from my house. So these things happen really a lot. It's just how it is there. And what I always say to tourists who come to New Orleans, I always say, just don't try to explore the city in the evening. Don't go anywhere you don't know, because these people know you are a tourist. They can see you, you know, at the first look, and it's just not safe.
You report for Czech radio from New Orleans, also Czech TV, and you write from there. What kind of things do your editors or listeners or readers or viewers typically express interest in, or what kind of stories get the biggest reaction?
Oh, I think it would be jazz and carnival stories, because those are always very alive. You know, they really can present the city and the energy of the place, and also the links with Czech Republic. So whenever I find somebody who is from Czech Republic and who has an interesting story, I try to interview that person, and it comes out pretty well.
And are there many Czechs in New Orleans?
There are not so many, but the community is growing now. I think we are many, we just don't know about ourselves, you know what I mean? We actually have a new honorary consul now. He was named just a month ago, and he looks like he's trying to really get us together. So hopefully I'll find new people soon.
In your book is written New Orleans Przechodna Adresa, like temporary address. How long do you see yourself staying in the city?
That's a big question. We love it there, of course, but we also see that the city has many disadvantages for family life, for kids. The school system is so complicated in the US comparing to what we know from here. The health system is, you know, so different. So we'll see. My husband is originally from Turkey, so we are kind of open to all kind of options. And my kids are small. So yeah, we'll just try to give them, you know, all the options of the world right now.
And author Yulia Orbisheva was speaking to our own Ian Willoughby. And that edition of One on One brings us to the end of our program today. If you tuned in late, not to worry. You can find the full broadcast on Radio Prague's website at radio.cz. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, and we invite you to follow us there. If you have any questions or comments about today's content, please do get in touch. Our email address is english@radio.cz. For me, Brian Kennedy, and everyone in the studio, thanks for listening, and goodbye for now.